get back to the music in just a minute, but I had a, you mentioned the candy factory, and it just reminded me that I've been told that you had a myriad of jobs over the years, not just singing, but...
No, a myriad.
Yes.
In fact, when I retired from CLASS Incorporated, which is the Citizens League of Special Services, I was the office manager, and I was so proud to be at CLASS because it was a school for, at that time you could call them disadvantaged adults.
Okay.
The employees there were to help these young people learn how to count money, how to live a fairly normal life, get into a group home, even to get jobs. Mm-hmm. And it made me so proud to be there, although I don't think I could have done what they do.
Was that your first job?
Oh, heck no.
How many jobs have you had, do you think?
60.
60?
Well, because after I retired, I became a temp.
Okay. What was one of the first ones that you remember, though? I mean, was it like just do anything that you could do, you know?
As a temp?
No, when you were growing up, you know, like
I worked at the city hall for the town accountant.
You did?
Yes.
But did you have a degree in accounting, or could you just go? You could just go
no.
work for them?
No, they liked me.
Okay.
And they gave me the job because I could learn and... Yeah. And I worked for the town accountant. Little did I know that how many years later I would be working for the City Hall of Newburyport, working for the city controller. I mean, and I enjoyed it all. I enjoyed every job.
Was it primarily office jobs that you had?
Yes, but when I was a temp, I was a temp for... Clinical psychologists. I transcribed their interviews.
Wow. That must have been
something. I worked at one time for a large company I was the assistant to the security officer, and I cleared through top secret and higher clearances for the government.
Ooh.
So in that way, I served my country.
Yes. Yes, wow.
But you know the beautiful thing what I did there?
What's that?
Like, you can always be an advocate, and you can always be a channel. Mm-hmm. It's just, you got to let it happen. Mm-hmm. While I was a security clearance supervisor, I would gather the information and go over it with applicants that wanted a job in a company that needed security clearance. Mm-hmm. That's almost everywhere now.
Right.
And I remember talking to young people, and like just out of their teens, or people that you knew that they hadn't been perfect boys.
Okay.
Or perfect girls.
Yep.
So I remember saying to them, just between you and me, I'd say, just between you and me, when you fill out this form I'm going to give you, don't lie. Tell it like it is. Because when you lie, the lie will follow you. But if you don't lie, they'll say, this isn't that bad of a thing. And they can clear you, and you can have a good job. If you lie, you'll never have that good job because you lied. They don't want you to lie. They want you to be upfront and honest. And thereby get over it, tell it like it is, be straightforward all your life, and you will do better. Well, I did that over and over and over again, until one day I had married, I was pregnant with my very special daughter, Elizabeth. I was so happy to be pregnant. I was 41, I think. But anyway, my husband had taken me to Salisbury Beach for, it was stifling weather, and it was August, I think, August. And the baby wasn't due for a couple of months. So he took me to Salisbury, and we were walking around by the ocean breezes. And And these three men, young men passed me, and one of them turned around. Now, I had a very large tummy at that time. Mm-hmm. And he turned around and he said, "Ethel, is that you?" And I said his name, but at this moment, I can't remember.
That's okay.
But he came up to me and he said to his friends, "This lady saved my life." And I said, "How?" And he said, "You remember?" He said, "I told the truth. I got the job. I got the clearance. I'm having a great life. Thank you."
Okay. We just shut the microphone off for just a sec so that we could, or ask for some more water, which they're bringing. And you started telling me about all of these different places that you worked at, especially, I was going to ask you if you ever worked for the CIA, but apparently that's not something that can be talked about, which is whether you did or didn't or anything like that. We know nothing.
Well, let us say as an assistant secretary to the security officer, mm-hmm. he was a wonderful man, and he wanted me. He liked that I wanted to learn. He liked that I took it seriously, and he impressed on me how important the security clearances were and how important it was for people not to lie. Now, if the lie would have been really a bad and injurious kind of thing, then of course they would be denied. Mm-hmm. If it was something, well, we all know those kinds of things.
It's too bad you didn't get to tell these things to congressmen, congressional candidates, and presidential candidates, eh?
I would really like for them to talk to people that have been there. These are young people who, well, they're in themselves. And even though they're part of the great religions, which are called the great religions, this is the issue I have with being, thinking that you're the one and only. Jews know that they're not the one and only. And I think that the more unification we have in our minds, as for the unification of all men and women, no matter what their color, they're our brothers, they're our sisters, they're our children. And we need to do something for them. And if it means talking to the senators and the presidents to get a grip, or, you know, move aside from yourself and look at things in a unified way. That's what I feel as a spiritual person, that I'm a brother and I'm a sister and I'm a mother to everyone, to all children, everywhere.
Now, there wasn't a particular church that taught you this, but
No, my life's learnings. Yeah. I think it's the jobs I had that made me meet all kinds of people from all walks.
Oh, here comes our water.
Yes.
What a girl.
Cups, clean ones, but here they go.
Very
Thank
good.
You very much.
Thank you very much. They take care of us here.
They take care of us here, I'll tell you. They're wonderful people.
Now, you worked with older people before.
Oh, yes.
Tell me a little bit about some of the volunteering that you've done. Quite a bit of okay, here you are, working jobs, singing as a profession as well, at the same time, raising a family at the same time as well.
Alone,
raising a family.
I raised my children alone. Okay. So in a way, my children got most of me. I'm grateful. Because most of me is the good. Most of me is the good because I saw to it that I only kept good in my life. I was even, I even was strong enough, as I grew stronger, I was strong enough to say to people, look, you like me, I like you, but there's nothing here. We're not going on any further. Not many people can do that. People have people in their lives that are really crutches for them, and they can't say, look, get change your attitude, or I'm done. Now I say that to people, so that in doing that, I have surrounded myself with people who only think the way I do. And that's what you want to do. That's really what you want to do, because if you're musical, if you're artistic, if you're loving, if you're friendly, if you're a child of God, I mean, all of these things go together for your benefit. They don't if you're saying, mine is the way and mine is only the way, which was the issue between my brother and I, Paul. And I say, well, there, we'll know when I get there, we can talk about it further.
Chat about it upstairs.
We can we can discuss it at length. And he would laugh. He would laugh.
So you were doing a lot of things, but also finding time to volunteer.
Well, when I retired, pretty much. I then went to the elder services because I wanted to earn a little bit of money, and they had a little bit of money for people who could be a senior aide and go into companies. So I worked at the Council on Aging in Haverhill. I worked for the Red Cross in Newburyport. And did clerical work for them, and then from there I went to Pettingill House in Salisbury, where I was so honored to be the receptionist, and I worked on a database for them, for their private information, all patients and all clients. Information is very private, and I was only limited to certain amounts of information in order to do the database for them. I don't know if they're still using it, but it was what they needed at the time. And I was a receptionist, and because I had such a love of people, and the people coming in there were coming in there with untold numbers of heart. Sick at heart problems. They'd lost their jobs. They had nowhere to go. They were on the street trying to make food for their little babies, trying to get a place to live and cover for them. I have such a respect for the Pettingill House and Deb Smith, who was the leader, and Kathy Burnham, who was my mentor there, and her sister Heidi Fournier, who ran the business end of it, and all the the people that worked there were so dedicated, and they liked their patients, and they loved their patients, and they'd do anything for them. That was one of the proudest years of my life. They hired me and raised my pay to $10. And I don't know if I was there two years, I think, or more, I don't remember. But when they left, I had to leave. I wasn't feeling too well, and I had to retire from there. And then I keep hearing from this one and that one. I'd meet people everywhere, which you weren't supposed to recognize because it was a private business. at nonprofit, mm-hmm. and you weren't supposed to recognize a lot of people. But I found them coming right up to me and giving me hugs and saying, why don't you come back? You made our life so happy. We laughed. You gave us a sense of humor. It was a wonderful time, another time where I could share. And only God knows what you did there for him. You do it because it's there to do and be done. You don't have to say anything, but it's how you are. It's how people perceive you. If they see you as a selfish person, that's what they see. If they see you as a giver, people who that you want to share a laugh, good humor, stories about their children, everything. It's a lot of people, and I wasn't the counselor there. I wasn't the counselor.
No, you were. It sounds like you were an organizer.
I was an organizer, yeah. But they'd sit beside my desk and they'd say, what would you do? Da-da-da-da-da. And I'd say, well, make it funny too. And I'd say, well, now wait a minute. And I'd say, I pray. I'd say, God, this person needs something from me. So let me give it and forget it. Let me give what they need and let me forget it. And these are the people that come up to me wherever I am and say, I still wear the hat you chose for me from the Christmas tree hat.
I heard a story about a Christmas tree hat that you were wearing one time.
Did you?
Getting stuck in a fan.
Got stuck in a fan.
I heard that just the other day from a friend of yours.
I've had a wonderful life.
Did you? I mean, there must have been times in life where you felt like you didn't make the right choice. Or maybe there wasn't.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I was 39, and I was not I thought I was nice looking. I thought I had a really great personality. But I wasn't a men didn't weren't taken to me. I think maybe because of how strong I was.
Okay, physically.
And if a guy isn't strong, he sees the strength in you. Mm-hmm. Then that's going to be a turnoff.
Mm, yeah, potentially. Yeah, I would say.
So I accepted that, but I thought that maybe I was frigid or something. Let's be honest. I mean, I thought that. That there was something missing in me.
Yeah. Oh,
there may be one thing that would be missing in me, you know what I mean? But but then I was a singer, I told you, and yeah. I moved back from California,
yep.
where I worked for a very big company. And I moved back from Tunahunt, really, because I missed my family. And then with the job, it dissipated itself, and I didn't really have anything more to give. And I had a call from the fellow that was a security officer before, and he knew that I liked nasty jobs. I liked things that nobody else would do. And so he called me. At the time, I had left one job, and I was working at Sylvania. In the personnel department, and I knew him right away. But he's a CIA agent. I mean, he was a security officer, and and so what I mean is that he knew how to find me.
Yeah. Okay. He knew how to find you. That's what you mean.
He found me.
Yeah. He found you.
He before he worked. In security, he was security for the government, and he was quite important in Boston, mm-hmm. and followed the Kennedy family quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
And he was very interesting, although he said, I'm sorry, I can't talk about it.
Of course not. No, he can't.
So he called me, and he said, are you ready to move on? And I said, well, it's going to have to be a good job, and I want good money. And I remember at the time, now today, this is nothing for money. But I was ballsy, see?
Yep.
If he wanted me back, he wanted me back for a reason, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I said, he's going to pay then. Mm-hmm. He's going to have me pay, and I want a ticket back. Mm-hmm. So he said, I've got a job. It's a security job. He said, it's for some lawyers that have to process this big, big do. And it's not going well. And he said, it's actually a bag of worms, is what he said. Mm-hmm. My alley.
Yeah, he said, great.
I said, oh, you're kidding. I never dreamed I'd have another job like that. And so I said, okay, you send me a ticket. I should have said first class. I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I want $600 a month. Mm-hmm. What is that, $150 a week?
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, yeah, not very much right now by today's standards.
But I was enough to ask for that. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, I said, you want me, then I want $600 a month.
Yeah.
And my benefits. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know that it may not last long because I do a job and mm-hmm. it's done. Mm-hmm. And he says, you drive a hard bargain, but I'll take it. And so I went back.
Yeah.
I went back. And I was glad to get home. Yeah. I sold the Buick. I bought a brand new Buick to drive across the country to that that California job. Mm-hmm. I took 13 days to drive across the country, but I made sure I saw some beautiful things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty quick, but I mean, I know that you can make some stops.
Especially when you're alone, you don't have to say, do you want to know?
Tell me about that, actually. I mean, that
was an amazing thing.
How old were you?
Well, it was 1962.
1962.
So?
And you buy yourself a Buick and say...
I bought a brand new Buick LeSabre with fins.
Fins. Nice.
Beige with brown. Oh. Buick. I wanted a safe ride. What I gotta say?
Yeah.
So, I drove across the country. I stayed... One of the interesting things is people were so afraid of you to drive across the country mm-hmm. at that time, and I suppose now too.
Well, they didn't have big freeways, did they? I mean, or did they?
Oh, they had freeways, but I chose to go through family, mm-hmm. small towns, so it took me 13 days to go. But I remember driving along this country road. I don't know where I was, but it was like... beyond Chicago somewhere and into the what do they call it, rural area.
Okay, yeah.
And I was driving, I was very tired of driving, and I had promised myself not to drive too long but to stop. But I didn't see any place to stop. Well, I pulled us over, and this lady was hanging her laundry out across the street. And she walked over to the car. Maybe not do that today.
Maybe not.
Maybe not today. Yeah. But she walked over to the car, and she said, you look tired. And I said, I'm kind of road weary. I see this road, the line in the road was hitting me. And she said, why don't you come in and into the kitchen and have a cup of tea?
Yeah, that probably wouldn't happen nowadays, right?
No. Okay. So she I didn't take anything in the car but my purse. I went in the house. I mean, somebody would be afraid to go in anybody, even a woman's house today. Mm-hmm. But she put me down. She had a piece of fresh apple pie, which is my favorite, mm-hmm. and a cold cup of iced tea. Mm-hmm. And we sat there at her kitchen table and talked about our early days, about our growing up, about our families, about the children she had, the husband she lost. I don't remember her name, but I think she's waiting for me.
She may have been one of those people in the dream that Elizabeth had. Who knows? It's a congregation waiting for you. Congregating.
People who know you and see you, who you are. Mm-hmm. And at that time, wasn't afraid to look at you and see you, who you are. Mm-hmm. But today, I think it's too bad that people are getting frightened of each other.
Why do you think that is?
The media, no. The politics, the bad choices. And you don't trust your heart.
Yeah.
You have to trust your heart. The people have been in my life are very hard for me to let go. Because they've been, every one of them, brothers and sisters. I really mean that. They're brothers and sisters to me. Even my sons. And my stepsons, they're family. I mean, they're very, very, very important to me. And I just want to affect their lives. I want them to see a goodness that they can look at and look after and look for. That's very important.
That's what you want them to do.
Yes. Yes. Because we all have idiosyncrasies, you know. I have mine. I'm sure my family will say what mine are. We laugh about them.
No, they told me you were perfect.
They can't. They they couldn't have told you. No, even though I tried to teach them that.